At 1 o'clock, the news is read by John Shea.
The Chief Secretary to the Treasury, Danny Alexander, has said that the government is to take legal action to recoup billions of pounds paid out to cover the deposits of British savers in collapsed Icelandic banks. A settlement to reimburse the UK was rejected by Icelanders for a second time in a referendum yesterday, a result described by Mr. Alexander as disappointing. Lawyers for two of the News of the World's phone hacking victims have said the paper's apology and offer of compensation aren't enough. The paper is thought to be offering settlements to at least eight people whose answer phone messages were listened to, although lawyers are predicting more people will come forward now that the paper has admitted liability. A gunman who shot dead six people in a Dutch shopping centre yesterday before killing himself has been named as 24-year-old Tristan van der Vlies. He was a member of a shooting club and had a permit for five weapons, including the machine gun he used in the attack. The Royal College of Nursing is holding its annual conference today and has warned that increasing numbers of its members are considering industrial action over cuts to NHS staffing in England. The Department of Health says any efficiency savings won't adversely affect patient care. The people of Omar will hold a rally for peace this afternoon to send a message to the bombers who murdered Constable Ronan Kerr in the town last weekend. Hundreds of people are expected to march through the town, where 29 people were killed in a bombing by the Real IRA in 1998. The rally comes a day after a £500 bomb was found under a van near the main Belfast to Dublin road near Newry. The government is to ban councils in England from trying to fine householders who break the rules on rubbish collections and stop them from imposing extra charges for removing waste. Ministers say they want to stop people being penalised for such offences as leaving bins out once they've been emptied or filling them so that the lids won't close. And the weather. It'll be a fine, dry and warm day with long sunny spells. It'll become increasingly cloudy in northern and western parts of Scotland and Northern Ireland with outbreaks of mainly light rain. The news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at just after 2 minutes past one.
We begin a series of four programmes on the history of the American Civil War later today on Radio 3. Adam Smith travels to Virginia to investigate the legacy of the war, which ended slavery but destroyed much of the South and claimed the lives of a fifth of the men of fighting age. In part one, he considers the war from the South's perspective, its defeat, and the long-term impact that's had on that part of the USA. The American Civil War, in our Sunday feature at 9:30 tonight. But next, this afternoon, the second of this weekend's early music shows with Lucy Skeeping.
Welcome to our little hour of merriment and a question for you. How do you get from this to this? No, the answer isn't simply pay an orchestra to come into the studio, which might be a bit of a tight fit. No, it's all about a particular form of music and its journey through time. A form that was originally just a simple chord pattern, as we heard strummed on the guitar, but would end up being incorporated into all kinds of works over the centuries. And it's called the Passacaglia.
Thank you.
harpsichordist Rinaldo Alessandrini with a passacaglia by Juan Cabanilles, organist at Valencia Cathedral during the late 1600s. So where did the passacaglia form actually originate? Well, like Cabanilles, it came from Spain. The word pasar meaning to walk and calle meaning a street. So we might reasonably deduce that it was originally some kind of street music, a lone guitarist perhaps playing as he wandered around amongst the crowds at a festival or something. But gradually this simple chord sequence was taken up by all sorts of composers throughout Europe until there was hardly a single piece, vocal or instrumental, that didn't in some way feature a passacaglia, from madrigals or complex keyboard variations to ballet music in some elaborate French court opera. But for its next appearance, we must turn to the earlier part of the 17th century and to Italy, where the Spanish five-course guitar was now becoming popular. Mind you, at this stage, the passacaglia was still a pretty simple kind of sound, as we find in a book of guitar music by Girolamo Montesardo, published in Florence. It contains 11 pages of passacaglias, all based on the same traditional chord sequence and rhythms. Montesardo described those basic strumming exercises as easy and necessary for those who want to learn how to play the passacaglia. After him came another Italian, Bisegno, who published a collection of songs, each one with a little passacaglia as an introduction. And it wasn't long before the idea of a short strummed passacaglia was seen as the perfect till ready on the stage. In other words, a sort of vamp or musical interlude in, say, an opera or a musical play. It would allow the singer time to get in position, to take a breath, or simply just to warn the audience to stop chatting, which they were very often doing while waiting for their favourite aria to begin. You get that sort of thing in Monteverdi's Coronation of Poppea of 1642, one of the very first operas to feature a historical event rather than Greek mythology. The aria Il Giorno Femminile starts and finishes with the same lilting instrumental passacaglia, and we also hear it in the middle as well. It's a sort of Gather Ye Rosebuds moment. The evening of a woman's life begins at noon. From midday her beauty is on the wane. For young girls, in the morning of their lives, love keeps them company. Don't waste these verdant months, because in a few short hours, ripeness turns to decay. A gentle passacaglia ending the aria Il Giorno Femminile from Monteverdi's Coronation of Poppea. Catherine Denley with the City of London Baroque Symphonia, conducted by Richard Hickox. You could say that what characterises the traditional passacaglia form is that it's simply a series of repeating chords, or bass pattern, as musicians call it. But as I said, things are never that simple. And in fact, another Spanish dance form, the chaconne, uses an almost identical harmonic sequence. That too originated in Spain and may be even older than the passacaglia. But with them being so similar, well, pretty well interchangeable, some composers just put instructions in the score that a chaconne or a passacaglia could be played at a certain point. Evidently, either of them would do. And in this next music, we actually hear both the passacaglia and the chaconne. It's by Girolamo Frescobaldi, organist at St. Peter's in Rome, just a few years after Monteverdi's time, and the very first composer to lift the passacaglia out of the popular guitar repertoire and make it a piece in its own right. Here's Alexander Weimann with Frescobaldi's Partita Centro Sopra Passacagli.
Thank you.
a passacaglia played there by Alexander Weimann, on an organ made by Vladimir Schleich in 1997. Our next example comes from France, where the passacaglia, and indeed its cousin, the chaconne, both regularly featured in dance music for opera and ballet. And who was the most famous chap over there writing such things? Jean-Baptiste Lully, of course, master of Baroque opera and favourite provider of extravagant entertainments at the court of Louis XIV. Lully's fame spread far and wide. He influenced the likes of Henry Purcell and Bach, whose contribution to the passacaglia form we'll hear later on. But for now, it's all about theatre. We're going to hear part of Lully's opera Armide, the very end of the work, where a gentle, tinkly passacaglia alternating between instruments and chorus brings the final act to a close. Love it is who here holds captive the thousand birds we hear night and day in our woods. Young hearts, everything is on your side. Make the most of happiness while it lasts. The enchantress Armide has been casting spells, desperately hoping to magic the hunky warrior Renaud to fall in love with her. And the repetitive, almost hypnotic, rocking passacaglia rhythm is the perfect choice.
Thank you. agréable et tranquille. Que ces lieux sont charmants pour les heureux amants. Que ces lieux sont charmants pour les heureux amants.
The final music of Lully's opera Armide in the form of a Passacaglia, and that was Les Arts Florissants, directed by William Christie. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and we're exploring passacaglias today, the way composers from all over Europe incorporated the form into their works. And from the graceful theatricality of Lully's France, we now move to our own favourite adopted composer, Handel, who came to England from Germany in the early 18th century and liked it so much that he stayed. Handel's passacaglias can be very complex. And in this one, we hear it as a set of variations, in other words, the traditional harmonic sequence repeated round and round, but with all sorts of different and increasingly elaborate stuff going on above it. It's the sixth and final movement of Handel's Suite No. 7 in G minor, one of his most famous pieces, in fact, and he's put his personal stamp on it. A rather grandiose feel, not in the usual swinging three time of the old passacaglias, but in an almost pounding duple or common time.
Thank you.
Passacaglia by Handel, the final movement from his suite number 7, performed there by Sophie Yates. The key Handel went for there is G minor, a key that was often associated with doom and gloom. The way modern instruments are tuned these days can sometimes rather iron out the special characteristics of the different keys, but these distinctions were much more obvious to the ear when it came to early keyboard instruments. The French composer Charpentier, a successor to Lully, called G minor sévère et magnifique, while it was pronounced Mozart's key of tragedy. And indeed, the Passacaglia itself was now becoming associated with sorrow, with arias whose mood was misery or mourning, as we'll hear in this next example. It's by Monteverdi, his madrigal entitled Lamento della Ninfa, the Nymph's Lament, which is based on the Passacaglia rhythm and repeated bass line. Send back my lover as he once was, or kill me. And in between her moans, we hear other voices commenting as well. Oh, wretch, no, she cannot bear so much coldness. Never more will you receive such sweet kisses. It's all highly theatrical, and I think this is a particularly beautiful performance by members of Tragicommedia.
Oh!
a passacaglia in the setting of a rather unusual madrigal, Lamento della Ninfa, by Monteverdi, from his eighth book, published in 1630. The performers were Tragicommedia. So the passacaglia had now become the standard form for lament, frequently the setting for mournful songs like that. But this association with melancholy can be found in purely instrumental music as well. And to illustrate that kind of thing, I thought we might hear a piece by a composer working in the following century, Heinrich Bieber, who was born the year after Monteverdi died. Bieber came from Bohemia, a violin virtuoso who worked at the court in Moravia and then at the Kapelle in Salzburg. Charles Burney was evidently a great admirer. Of all violin players of the last century, he wrote, the 17th, that is, Bieber seems to have been the best, and his solos are the most difficult and fanciful of any I have seen of the period. If by fanciful Burney meant quirky, then he was certainly correct. Bieber invented his own special sort of violin tuning called scudatura, and at the heart of his style was an kind of unpredictability, an amazing talent for extemporisation, which is nowhere more evident than in the Passacaglia for unaccompanied violin that he wrote as an appendix to his famous mystery or rosary sonatas. The music's certainly mournful and touching, and Bieber has even included a little picture in the manuscript, a young child being led to heaven by the hand of a guardian angel. It's a reference, actually, to a contemporary hymn to the guardian angel, a melody whose first line corresponds exactly to Bieber's Passacaglia bass pattern.
Thank you.
Heinrich Bieber's so-called Rosary Passacaglia, performed by Andrew Manzi. By the late 18th century, the Passacaglia form had fallen out of fashion, but in the late 19th and 20th, composers returned to it again, people like Brahms and Webern, Shostakovich and Benjamin Britten, who rediscovered the old Passacaglia models when they began exploring the early music repertoire. And one composer that really stood out for them is Bach, who ends today's programme. Weeping, lamenting, worrying and distress are the bread of affliction for Christians who bear the sign of Jesus. Bach set those words to a Passacaglia in his 12th cantata, connecting the form with tragedy and loss. And later on, he used the same music again for the most agonising moment of all in his B minor mass, the Crucifixion. So our last music is Bach's Passacaglia for organ in C minor. It's built on a short 8-bar theme that we first hear in the bass, played on the foot pedals of the organ. And then some 21 endlessly elaborate variations follow. And you remember that simple guitar strum that we heard at the beginning of the programme, the three-chord trick that all traditional Passacaglias are based on? Well, it's still there, even within such an artful, sophisticated piece, that old chord pattern and bass note sequence whose rhythmic momentum reminds us of the Passacaglia's dance-like origins. Here's the organist Simon Preston with Bach's Passacaglia in C minor.
Thank you.
That was the Pax Sicalia from Bach's Passacaglia and Fugue in C minor, BWV 582. And that ends today's Early Music Show. It was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced in Manchester by Ava Norman. Next Saturday, Lucy explores Henri Dumont's influence on the development of the Petit and Grand Motets. That's at the same time, just after 1 o'clock, here on BBC Radio 3. Well, stay with us this afternoon and you can discover the music of Australia as we explore the work of Brett Dean. Two pieces by him, in fact, Recollections and Wolflieder, which is inspired by the life and the songs of Ugo Wolf. Brett Dean is the subject of this week's Discovering Music, and he'll be taking part in the programme himself. Discovering Music is at 5 this afternoon. You're listening to BBC Radio 3, and if you've sent in a request lately, you never know, it could be your week. It's time for Radio 3 Requests with Fiona Talkington.
Thanks very much, and hello again. The arrival of spring, a time to celebrate, but the joy here is tinged with tears. Will this be the last spring? Barbara Bonney sings Grieg. Voren, or Spring, one of Grieg's favourites among his own compositions, and Grieg's best song, writes Oliver Bernard from Norfolk. The elation of seeing the snow melt after the long winter, the flowers and the birdsong. But I am weary, says the poet. Will this be the last one? Well, it's my last Radio 3 request, so I'll try and get in as many of your choices as I can this afternoon. Music from Roger Quilter's Where the Rainbow Ends is the choice of Dr. Barry Alcock. The experience I associate with it, and particularly the track called Rosamond, writes Barry, is an iconic one and takes me back over 30 years. It's a summer evening and the sunset filters through into the bedroom where my girls, then 4 and 2 years old, had just fallen asleep. We usually played something peaceful after the statutory stories, and it was this music which was playing. It made for me a moment of timeless beauty, and one I revisit every time I hear it. Here, first of all, from Where the Rainbow Ends, is Will-o'-the-Wisp.